Chapter 4. Using the Dancing Men for Good. When the youth had been sent off with the note, Sherlock Holmes gave his instructions to the servants. If any visitor were to call asking for Mrs. Hilton Cubitt, no information should be given as to her condition. He was only to be shown at once into the drawing room. Then he led the way into the drawing room with the remark that all we could do was wait. The doctor had departed to see his patients. Only the inspector and myself remained. "I think that I can help you to pass the time in an interesting manner," said Holmes. He then drew up his chair to the table and spread out in front of him the various papers on which the dancing men were recorded. "I must tell you, first of all, about Mr. Hilton Cubitt coming to see me in Baker Street." He then briefly stated the facts which have already been recorded. "I have here in front of me these strange productions. I am fairly familiar with all forms of secret writings. Over the years, I have analyzed hundreds of secret codes, but I confess that this is entirely new to me. The system is apparently meant to hide that these characters convey a message. The drawings are meant to look like pictures made by children." "I at once recognized, however, that the symbols stand for letters. Thus, I have applied the rules which guide us in all forms of secret writings. The solution then became easy enough. The first message was so short that it was impossible for me to do more than to say, with some confidence, that the symbol stood for E. E is the most common letter in the English alphabet. It occurs to such an extent that even in a short sentence, one would expect to find it most often. Out of 15 symbols in the first message, 4 were the same. It was reasonable, therefore, to set this down as E. In some cases, the figure was bearing a flag, and in some cases not. From the way in which the flags were distributed, I reasoned that they were used to break the sentence up into words. I thus concluded that E was represented by... But now the real difficulty appeared. The order of the English letters after E is by no means clear. Speaking roughly, T, A, O, I, N, S, H, R, D, and L are the numerical order in which letters occur. However, T, A, O, and I are very nearly equal to each other. It would be an endless task to try each combination until a meaning was arrived at. I needed more material to work from. Mr. Hilton Cubitt was able to give me 2 more short sentences. He also supplied me with 1 message, which appeared, since there was no flag, to be a single word. Here are the symbols. Now, in the single word, I have already got the 2 E's coming second and fourth in a word of 5 letters. It might be sever, or lever, or never. There can be no question that never, as a reply to an appeal, is by far the most probable. I also believe the 1-word message to be a reply written by the lady. Accepting this as correct, we now have the symbols for N, V, and R. It then occurred to me that these messages most likely came from someone who knew the lady. A combination which contained 2 E's with 3 letters between might very well stand for the name Elsie. I found that such a combination formed the end of a message and was 3 times repeated. It was certainly some appeal to Elsie. In this way, I got my L, S, and I. But what appeal could it be? There were only 4 letters in the word which came before Elsie, and it ended in E. Surely the word must be come. I tried all other 4 letters ending in E, but could find none to fit the case. So now I was in possession of C, O, and M. From all that I knew, I worked out the first message to be this: M, E-R-E, E, S-L, and E. Now we see that the first letter must be A, which is the most useful discovery. It occurs no fewer than 3 times in this short sentence. The H is also apparent in the second word. Now it becomes am here, A-E slain. Or, filling in the obvious missing letters in the name, am here, Abe Slaney. The second message then worked out in this fashion. A-E-L-R-I-E-S. Here I could only make sense by putting T and G for the missing letters. The name in this message must be some house or inn at which the writer was staying.
What did you do then, sir? Asked the inspector.
I had every reason to suppose that this Abe Slaney was an American. Abe is an American short form, and a letter from America had been the starting point of all the trouble. I had also every reason to think that there was some criminal secret in the matter. I therefore sent a telegram to my friend Wilson Hargreave of the New York police. He has more than once made use of my knowledge of London crime. I asked him whether the name of Abe Slaney was known to him. Here is his reply. The most dangerous criminal in Chicago. On that very evening that I had his answer, Hilton Cubitt sent me the last message from Slaney. Working with known letters, I found it took this form. Elsie, re, r, to meet thy go. The addition of a P and a D completed the message. It is seen to be a threat. I at once came to Norfolk with my friend Dr. Watson. Unhappily, we arrived only in time to find that the worst had already occurred. It is an honor to investigate this case with you, said the inspector warmly. However, I must speak plainly to you. You are only answerable to yourself, but I have to answer to my superiors. Suppose this Abe Slaney, living at Elridge's, is indeed the murderer. If he has made his escape while I am seated here, I should certainly get into serious trouble. You need not worry. He will not try to escape. I expect him here any minute.
Why should he come?
Because I have written and asked him. In fact, if I am not very much mistaken, here is the gentleman himself coming up the drive. A man was coming up the path which led to the door. He was a tall, handsome, dark fellow dressed in a suit of gray. He had a black beard and carried a cane. He walked up the path as if the place belonged to him, and we heard his loud, confident ring of the bell. "I think, gentlemen," said Holmes quietly, "that we had best take up our position behind the door. You will need your handcuffs, Inspector. You can leave the talking to me." We waited in silence for a minute. Then the door opened, and the man stepped in. In an instant, Holmes put a gun to his head, and Martin slipped the handcuffs over his wrists. It was all done so swiftly that the fellow was helpless before he knew that he was attacked. He looked from one to the other of us with a pair of angry black eyes. Then he burst into a bitter laugh.
"Well, gentlemen, you have me. But I came here in answer to a letter from Mrs. Hilton Cubitt. Don't tell me that she is in on this. Don't tell me that she helped to set a trap for me."
"Mrs. Hilton Cubitt was seriously injured and is at death's door," said Holmes. The man gave a sudden cry of grief, which rang through the house.
"You're crazy!" he cried fiercely. "It was he that was hurt, not she. Who would have hurt little Elsie? I may have threatened her, God forgive me, but I would not have touched a hair of her pretty head. Tell me that she is not hurt."
"She was found badly wounded by the side of her dead husband." He sank with a deep cry and buried his face in his handcuffed hands. For 5 minutes he was silent. Then he raised his face and spoke with the cold calmness of despair.
"I have nothing to hide from you, gentlemen," he said. "If I shot the man, he had his shot at me too. There's no murder in that. But if you think that I could have hurt that woman, then you don't know either me or her. I loved her. I had a right to her. She was promised to me years ago. Who was this Englishman that he should come between us?"
"She left America when she found out the man that you are," said Holmes. "She married an honorable gentleman in England. You chased her here and made her life miserable. You tried to convince her to abandon the husband whom she loved and respected in order to run away with you, whom she feared and hated.
You have ended up bringing about the death of a noble man and driving his wife to suicide.
If Elsie dies, I don't care what happens to me, said the American.
He opened one of his hands and looked at a note he held.
See here, mister, he cried with suspicion in his eyes. If Elsie is hurt as bad as you say, who was it that wrote this note?
He tossed it forward onto the table. I wrote it to bring you here.
You wrote it? There was no one on earth outside the joint who knew the secret of the dancing men. How could you write it?
What one man can invent, another can discover, said Holmes. Do you realize that Mrs. Hilton Cubitt herself is under suspicion of murdering her husband? The least that you owe her is to make it clear that she was not responsible for his tragic end.
I ask nothing better, said the American. I guess the very best case I can make for myself is the absolute truth. It is my duty to warn you that it will be used against you, said the inspector.
Slaney seemed not to care at all.
I'll chance that, he said. First of all, understand that I have known this lady since she was a child. There were seven of us working together in Chicago, and Elsie's father was the boss of the joint. Old Patrick was a clever man. It was he who invented that writing using the dancing men. Well, Elsie learned some of our ways, but she couldn't stand the business. She had a bit of honest money of her own, so she gave us all the slip and got away to London. She had been engaged to me. She would have married me, I believe, if I had taken up another profession. After she married this Englishman, I found out where she was. I wrote to her, but got no answer. After that, I came over, and as letters were no use, I put my messages where she could read them. Well, I have been here a month now. I lived in that farm where I had a room down below. I could get in and out every night, and no one was the wiser. I tried all I could to take Elsie away. I knew that she read the messages. Once she wrote an answer under one of them. Then my temper got the better of me, and I began to threaten her. She sent me a letter then, begging me to go away. She said that she would come down when her husband was asleep at 3 in the morning and speak with me through the end window. She brought money with her. She thought she could pay me off to make me leave. This made me mad, and I caught her arm and tried to pull her through the window. That was when the husband ran in with his gun in his hand. Elsie had sunk down on the floor, and we were face to face. I had a gun, too, and I held it up to scare him off and let me get away. He fired and missed me. I pulled off a shot almost at the same instant, and down he dropped. I ran away across the garden, and as I went, I heard the window shut behind me. That's God's truth, gentlemen, every word of it.
A cab had driven up while the American had been talking. Two uniformed policemen sat inside. Inspector Martin rose and led Abe Slaney out. We stood at the window and watched the cab drive away. As I turned back, my eye caught the paper which the prisoner had tossed on the table. It was the note with which Holmes had sent for him. "Can you read it, Watson?" asked Holmes with a smile. It contained no word but this little line of dancing men. "It simply means, come here at once," said Holmes. How could Slaney refuse such an invitation, since he thought only the lady could possibly write it? "And so, my dear Watson, we have turned the dancing men to good when they have so often been the agents of evil. 3:40 is our train. We should be back in Baker Street for dinner." Only a few words more to explain how it all ended. The American, Abe Slaney, could have been put to death at Norwich. However, his punishment was changed to serving time in jail since it was explained that Hilton Cubitt had fired the first shot. Of Mrs. Hilton Cubitt, I heard she recovered entirely. She remains a widow. She spends all of her time caring for the poor and managing her late husband's land and money.